On this show, as entrepreneurs, we often talk about the courage it takes to start something from scratch. Every successful brand begins with a vision, a purpose, and someone willing to take a chance on an idea. And while every founder's journey is different, many share the same determination to overcome obstacles, innovate, and build something meaningful from the ground up. That's why I always enjoy hearing founder stories, because behind every product is a real person who has invested time, energy, and passion into building something meaningful. Walmart is helping customers discover products from thousands of small brands while giving founders opportunities to grow, reach new communities, and share the stories behind their businesses. By making it easier to discover these brands, Walmart helps connect customers with innovative products and the entrepreneurs whose passion, resilience, and creativity help bring them to market. So whether you're an entrepreneur yourself or a dream driver looking to be inspired, it's exciting to see more opportunities for small brands to be discovered. Visit Walmart.com to learn more about the small brands and founder stories available in your community.
Welcome to the Nutrition for Me show on UK Health Radio, your global feel-good radio. Today's show is brought to you in association with Revive Active, our show's sponsor, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, offering solutions across all life stages. Revive Active are committed to pure, premium, and positive solutions for everyone's well-being needs, working with your body's needs from morning to night, from energy to restful sleep, kids' health to active aging. We've teamed up to provide UK Health Radio listeners with 15% off their range. So you can try it for yourself. Just go to reviveactive.com and use Radio 15 to see what feeling super is all about. This week, we're going to be talking about menopause and the importance of nutrition and lifestyle. Menopause, the natural biological stage when a person with ovaries stops having menstrual periods permanently, is a hot topic at the moment because women finally feel able to talk openly about it and are no longer allowing it to remain taboo. And as women speak out, we become increasingly aware of how menopause impacts women on many different levels. Menopause marks the end of the reproductive years, and in some cases can bring various physical, emotional, and cognitive symptoms like hot flashes, mood swings, and sleep issues, as well as brain fog. With the transition phase before perimenopause and the time after postmenopause also significant. Nutrition and lifestyle are crucial during menopause for managing symptoms like hot flashes, fatigue, and mood swings, while also protecting against long-term risks of osteoporosis and heart disease. We have an amazing expert here with us this week to unpack this topic, the topic of menopause and the importance of nutrition and lifestyle. Christine Bailey is a performance nutritionist, also a functional medicine nutritionist, a double Katie Award winner, Katie Healthy Eating Champion 2024, and Health and Nutrition Award winner 2022 for her work around mental health and teenagers. Christine Bailey has just finished her latest book, The Personalized Nutrition Guide to the Menopause, published by Singing Dragon and also available on Amazon. So you can get it from Singing Dragon, the publisher, or on Amazon. You can find out more about her work on her website, christinebailey.com, and also follow her on Facebook if you look for Christine Bailey Kitchen, also Instagram at Christine Bailey, and she's also on LinkedIn. Welcome to the show, Christine. So great to have you here.
Oh, thank you. It's always lovely to come back and talk about all things nutrition.
You have to come up back on more regularly. You've written a book about it's called The Personalized Nutrition Guide to the Menopause. That's why we wanted you on the show, because this is such a hot topic and you're the perfect person to speak about this very important transition in a woman's life. Can you give us a bit of an overview? Because women know now that what menopause is, but they don't really properly know unless they're a nutritionist or a doctor. So give us a bit of an overview about why the decline in estrogen and progesterone has such a big impact in the body of a woman and why it leads to these issues that they're feeling at menopause.
Yeah, and I love the fact that you said, Dora, that it's a transition, because sometimes it's worded like it's just an endpoint and it's just like life just stopped, and it doesn't. This is a long transition, actually, from perimenopause, which could be your mid to late 40s. I see clients that have early menopause or much later menopause, so it's very variable. Hence, the personalization is so important. And so when we look at the sort of perimenopause phase, which could be in your 40s, and for some women, they might not actually go into menopause until, you know, their 50s. Some people don't go in it until their late 50s, 60s. This is a long period of a woman's life that is highly influenced by fluctuating hormones, and then at menopause, quite a dramatic decline, particularly in estrogen. And it's actually estradiol, because there's various forms of estrogen, but it's estradiol that falls as the ovaries stop producing it. And also, of course, progesterone. It's not the only hormones that change. It's very much like an orchestra. There's a lot of other hormones that can also impact how a woman feels as she goes through this transition. And one of the things that I think we forget almost is that estradiol or estrogen and progesterone, they're much more than just about reproduction. In fact, they're very much involved in energy. And we have what we call receptors for these hormones in nearly every organ of our body. So that means that when estrogen starts to fluctuate, when progesterone starts to fall around perimenopause, and then a more dramatic decline at menopause, potentially every organ in your body could be impacted. And that's why, you know, you can speak to a range of women that are going through menopause, and their symptoms will be very varied. Some will have symptoms to do with more cognitive function. Some might notice massive changes in their skin, dryness, itching, tingling sensation. Others will notice it in joints, for example, or they'll notice it in vaginal dryness or urinary incontinence, or they may have issues with cardiovascular. So there's such a diverse range of symptoms. And so just one approach will be necessarily the one that will suit everyone. And I think that's the whole point, is that this is something that all women who have ovaries will go through, as long as they live long enough to go through menopause. And it can potentially affect a large part of your lifespan, because it's not just menopause, it's a transition. And we need to be really supporting ourselves early, perimenopause, and then all the way through. And nutrition and lifestyle are crucial for that.
I'm so glad you talked about the perimenopause, because women, maybe they're just thinking about when their periods stop and all those symptoms. But as you said, there's a run-up, there's a period of time before that. So we really need to educate ourselves. And this is why your book is so important, The Personalized Nutrition Guide to the Menopause, so that women can educate themselves on how to support their body so that the transition is easy and swift. I know a lot of women that they feel great going through this transition because they have that information on what they should be eating, what kind of lifestyle activities should they be engaging in, how can they support their sleep. And we're going to be talking about all of this today. You've said that there are estrogen receptors in every organ of the body. So I can imagine this is a bit worrying when you hear this. When estrogen tells off, what's going to happen to us? You've mentioned all of these symptoms, the vaginal dryness, the urinary incontinence, cognitive function, skin joints. I'm sure we're not meant to decline so terribly. I'm sure there's something that we can do. So let's talk about that and find out in the show. I think before we go into your advice, you also mentioned some longer term impacts of men and women's health. Maybe we should talk a bit about that first.
Yeah. And I think, do you know what, Dora? I think that's a really good point, because often the focus is on the hot flushes or the transient memory loss or those sort of what we call symptoms, which actually, absolutely, they are important to address. But what we often forget is there are what we call body-wide changes, and that can potentially lead us to an increased risk of various health conditions. And you're quite right. If we can really start implementing changes or just upgrading our nutrition and lifestyle in the perimenopause, it means that we can often not experience some of these more what we call worrying symptoms that are longer term. So things that I'm thinking of are poor cognitive function, so declines in memory, for example, but also things like anxiety and depression can rise. We also know that there are receptors for estrogen in the gut. And so one of the common complaints I've seen is women start experiencing more reflux, more what we call esophagus issues or IBS, digestive problems. And then because estrogen influences our immune response, we are actually at a greater risk of potentially more autoimmune conditions. So rheumatoid arthritis would be one of those, which can often increase postmenopause. And then you've got things like osteoporosis, cardiovascular disease. It's still the number one killer in women. And your risk actually goes up at menopause or postmenopause. And that, again, is because estrogen has such a profound effect on various factors that can influence our risk, like insulin and visceral fat and nitric oxide production and your LDL cholesterol. Estrogen influences all of these. And then, of course, there are other things that women may start to notice at perimenopause, and actually they don't improve. So things like poor sleep quality, I think, is one of those ones that I see all the time. And then that dreaded belly fat and weight gain, which, of course, long term could then lead to more metabolic issues.
And I guess from hearing all of these things, women might be going the reductionist route, just to taking medications to deal with the symptoms that they're feeling and they're seeing. But really, with nutrition and lifestyle advice, by the sounds of it, there's a lot they could do to avoid some of these symptoms manifesting and taking a hold of them.
Yes, absolutely. And it's also making sure that you're taking a much more what I would call body-wide approach. So rather than just saying, I've got hot flushes, we know that very extreme hot flushes may actually indicate more of an inflammatory system going on, which in turn could impact cardiovascular risk. Sometimes these symptoms are actually signs that there may be other things going on. We know that the estrogen decline can influence your metabolic health, how you handle blood sugar and insulin, and it can also change our immune response. So we actually become a bit like firecrackers. We react to things more. We become more inflammatory. And those key processes can actually influence many of our body systems, like joint health or brain health. And so again, addressing those, you can actually help your whole body to improve long term.
I think a lot of women, they just know about the hot flashes, the brain fog, maybe the tiredness, maybe the weight gain, but they don't realize that all of these other symptoms that you've mentioned could be related back to the menopause. So it's so good that we're highlighting this today. You mentioned brain fog. What other factors contribute to this?
Yeah, brain fog is one of those symptoms that I do see a lot in clinic, and it actually really worries women. And I understand that, because you start to think, oh my goodness, I'm not able to remember anything. My speed of thinking actually goes down, for example. And then, of course, people are worrying that, am I getting dementia? But it may not be anything to do with that at all. Now, why do we struggle more with how we remember things or the speed of our thinking? Or just some women describe it as almost trying to swim through treacle. They're just really struggling to think clearly, hence the brain fog. And there's a number of potentially contributing factors. Now, if it's happening during your perimenopause, which it can do, and you are still bleeding and you're having heavy bleed, please get your iron and ferritin checked, because actually low iron can absolutely affect your brain function, your ability to think quickly. So it might be something very obvious. So that's always the first thing, is get things ruled out. Likewise, we know that around menopause, there can be changes in thyroid function. again, suboptimal thyroid function could affect how clearly you feel and think. So it can affect mood, but it can also affect that sort of fogginess of the brain. So again, just get it ruled out. It's probably okay, but you always want to rule out what I would call the obvious things. And then in terms of what else is going on, estrogen is very important for the brain. In fact, it's so important, the brain can actually make its own estrogen. Now, it will be obviously affected by the systemic decline throughout the body, but estrogen is really important for things like how the brain uses glucose. And our brain actually uses about 20% of our total body energy. So any blip in that glucose handling can affect the brain and therefore your thinking, your speed of brain function. And estrogen affects things called the mitochondria, which are the powerhouses of our cells. They're really important for how we produce energy, including energy in the brain. And then estrogen influences various brain chemicals called neurotransmitters, which can affect things like memory neurotransmitters like acetylcholine, as well as dopamine. And again, these will influence our ability to stay focused and remember things. So these are just some of the areas where estrogen has a really profound effect on the brain. And what we know, particularly for brain fog, is we want to rule out the obvious. And another obvious one is hydration and electrolytes. I see a lot of women dehydrated, and simply adding some electrolytes and making sure you're hydrated can absolutely help the brain. We know that 2%, 3% dehydration can really affect your brain performance, for example. So we know that there are a number of reasons why brain fog can happen. And of course, if you're not sleeping, which is very common, that will just aggravate it further. Now, there are certain nutrients and supplements that we might use for brain fog, but it's really important to get those basics right first.
Let's talk about weight gain as well. It's another one that women worry about. They worry about the brain fog. Do they have Alzheimer's? We've unpacked that a bit. Then when they start gaining weight, they think they're never going to get it off. How is that belly that suddenly appeared? How had that happened? Why are women 3 times more likely to gain weight at this time?
Women that have never had a problem with their weight before will suddenly notice that they're getting this sort of literal belly bulge, as they call it often. And again, this is because estrogen is very much involved in your metabolic health. So estrogen actually helps with how the glucose in your bloodstream gets into the muscles and the fat. It actually improves how you handle your glucose. So when estrogen declines, we actually become more insulin resistant. We're less responsive to that glucose. To make matters, the estrogen can also direct where fat is more stored. So we have this shift from what we call subcutaneous, so that's your sort of hips, thighs, to the visceral belly. And that shift is influenced by that decline in estrogen. Then we also know estrogen influences areas in the brain that influence appetite regulation. So normally it will suppress various hormones that are involved with hunger, like ghrelin or what we call neuropeptides. So when estrogen goes down, actually women can often feel hungrier, and they're not also getting as strong a signal to know when to stop eating. So there's a number of things going on here in where fat is being directed, how we're utilizing that glucose, our appetite. And also, of course, unless we are doing something proactive to retain our muscle as we get older and with the estrogen decline, we are more likely to be losing muscle. And muscle is metabolically active. So we want to maintain that muscle, and we're going to have to be tweaking the diet and the lifestyle in order to do that. And by increasing muscle mass, you can also help with this body composition and reducing the belly fat. It's just harder. It will take more effort, I'm afraid.
We're going to be talking a lot more about menopause and the importance of nutrition and lifestyle with Christine Bailey, author of The Personalized Nutrition Guide To the Menopause, published by Singing Dragon, also available on Amazon, after a few messages from our commercial partners.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to Nutrition For Me show with Dora Walsh on UK Health Radio, talking about menopause, the importance of nutrition and lifestyle, with Christine Bailey, author of The Personalized Nutrition Guide to the Menopause, available from Singing Dragon Publishing, also on Amazon. So definitely check it out. It's an amazing book if you need help in this area, which 50% of the population will do at some stage. We've talked about the weight gain, Christine, the brain fog. Let's talk about the gut changes, because some women feel that they have constipation or have IBS. Why does that happen?
Yeah, and it affects many women, IBS anyway. And of course, at menopause with the changes in estrogen. So estrogen is very much involved with the health of the gut and the health of the gut microbiome. So as I mentioned earlier, we have receptors for estrogen within the gut. So when estrogen declines, then what can happen is that the peristalsis, the movement of foods through the bowel, can actually be reduced. So women will often find they become slightly more constipated, and they may also conversely get reflux more as well. In the gut, we know from the research that there are quite clear microbiome shifts, so changes in particularly the bacterium in our gut. And they've found two things. One, they found reduced diversity, so the range of species goes down, and that can often be associated with poorer health outcomes. But also there's a shift to potentially more pathogenic. So we have a reduced diversity, and we're now having growth of certain species that may not necessarily be beneficial. So what happens is women will often notice more bloating, more discomfort after eating, more constipation, more IBS. And estrogen also influences the gut barrier. So there can be potentially issues with the gut barrier as well. So there are a number of changes that can happen around perimenopause and menopause. And that means the importance of diet is really highlighted. We all know diet can have a profound effect on the gut. And if you're constipated or the diversity is going down, that really emphasizes why we need much more fiber, more plants in the diet, more color. And that's one of the key emphases in the sort of nutrition part of the meal plans is in the book, is to really increase that plant diversity.
We're going to be talking about the key nutrition foundations in a moment. But just before we go on to that, let's just talk about the last thing that is a big worry for women, is that the heart disease, because a risk of an increase in heart disease for women going through the transition. Let's unpack that a bit, Christine.
Yeah, the cardiovascular, I think, is often overlooked by women. Unless you've got overt symptoms or you've had a test, it's often very difficult to know, isn't it? And yet, cardiovascular risk rises significantly after menopause. So estrogen influences a number of things. It influences something called nitric oxide production. So nitric oxide can help with vasodilation. It helps with how flexible the vascular system is. And we want it to be flexible. We want to be able to be pumping blood around well. And that nitric oxide production actually also influences the brain, but it influences the health of the cardiovascular. And we also get changes in how we process lipids, so fats. So what we see is actually a rise in LDL cholesterol, and potentially, not always, but often, a reduced HDL function as well. On top of that, we see higher blood pressure, and we have dysregulation potentially in how you're handling glucose, and your metabolic health is very much intertwined with cardiovascular health. We often call it cardiometabolic, and there can be a rise in inflammation. So, you know, there's a number of contributing factors as to why cardiovascular risk increases post-menopause in women. And again, having those tests with your doctor just to see what is my baseline at the moment means you're much more able to start doing targeted support.
So important. I'm so glad you talked about the cholesterol. Just for our listeners today, the HDL and the LDL, there are two types. There are more than that, but the HDL is the good one, isn't it? Or the low, and the LDL is the bad one.
Yes, and we now know that total LDL is a risk factor with heart disease, as is something called ApoB, and that potentially is more of a risk factor. Unfortunately, at menopause, that also increases. A lot of healthcare practitioners, functional medicine practitioners, will do a very comprehensive cardiovascular blood test, and it will pick these up. And the good news is, because there is good news, diet can have a really profound effect on these.
Let's talk about diet. Let's have some hope now, because we've painted a really bleak picture here. But the good news is there are so many things that women can do to support themselves in this transition. And we're going to unpack that now. Christine, what are the key nutrition foundations every woman should know about the menopause?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is very much about getting the foundations right first, and then you might need to target where there are particular concerns. So one of the first things we know, and this is true as we get older, is we need to be supporting our muscle mass. And that means we do need sufficient protein. Now, I appreciate protein is everywhere and everyone talks about protein, but actually it is crucial at menopause. And there's been a number of studies to really flag this up. And we're going to be needing higher amounts of protein than perhaps we think. Now, when we look at the research, we're looking at around 1.2 to 1.6 grams of protein per kilogram of lean body mass. Now, if you are someone that is also exercising quite intensively, you might actually need higher amounts of protein. Now, if I put that in perspective, the chances are you're going to need around about 80 grams minimum of protein a day. You might well need more depending on your weight and your activity levels. That also means that you're probably going to have to focus on getting sufficient protein in at each meal, including breakfast. And actually what we know with having breakfast, breakfast that's quite high in protein, is it's a really good way to support adrenal stress response and resilience. Because one thing we haven't talked about is the fact that often when progesterone and estrogen decline, we don't have a buffer so much for how we respond to stress. And what happens is often the stress response, or when we produce cortisol, can be a little bit dysregulated. So some women will really struggle to get up in the morning because their cortisol levels are just not really rising, and they should be nice and high in the morning. And then instead, actually, the cortisol seems to be rising in the evening when actually they want it to be low, because otherwise they're not going to sleep. Now, having protein at breakfast can help with that resilience to stress. And it also means that we're going to be able to get in sufficient protein to support muscle protein synthesis, which can help with muscle mass maintenance and even growth. So that's the first one. Now, we also know, and it may not be trendy, but actually the Mediterranean diet really trumps here, because it's anti-inflammatory. It has lots of oily fish. We want those omega-3 fats, which lower inflammation, because as we mentioned, estrogen really influences our immune system, and we become more pro-inflammatory. So we want those omega-3s in the diet. And that means salmon, sardines, mackerel, herrings, once, twice a week. And that also is really important for brain health. Now, the Mediterranean, we're talking about traditional Mediterranean diet here, is actually very plant-heavy. So we want something that's more plant-heavy. It's not loads of pizzas. It is really very much legumes, beans and pulses. Olives, actually, absolutely, the healthy fat, the colour. You think of the diversity of the vegetables and the fruits. We want that colour in the diet. So, you know, we want the beans and pulses in. We want plenty of whole grains. We want colourful fruits and veg. We want those avocados, that fish, the shellfish. We want those in the diet. They have so many benefits in supporting not only nutrients that we need, but lowering the inflammatory pathways that can often be a problem. And then as part of that, there may be certain food groups that really are worth talking about. We've mentioned the oily fish, but we also need to talk about this group of plants that are called phytoestrogens.
Because women talk about them and we just think soya, but I think it's much more than soya, isn't it, Christine?
Absolutely. This is what we forget. Now, most of the studies have either been on the isoflavones, which are absolutely right, found in soya, or the lignans, which are actually found in flaxseed. But you're quite right, there are many food sources of phytoestrogens. Now, it is true to say that some of them, while they do contain phytoestrogens, the amount is not great. But again, this goes back to diversity in your diet. If we can get a range of these every day in our diet, that is going to be beneficial. So when I think about legumes and phytoestrogens, I think about chickpeas, lentils, kidney beans, split peas, butter beans. But also remember, the seeds, the nuts, the sprouted seeds are also good sources. So flaxseed, of course, but also sesame seeds, sunflower seeds, and some of these broccoli sprouts. These are great sources. Even certain fruits contain phytoestrogens, such as pomegranate, for example. And then certain vegetables like broccoli, cabbage will contain small amounts, as will certain grains like quinoa or oats. It's actually a wider range of plants than we often think. Now, why are these important? Phytoestrogens combined to those estrogen receptors, mainly estrogen beta, it's a type of estrogen receptor, and they have this mild estrogenic effect. Now, when you look at the research, there is some really good research to show that certain phytoestrogens can bring around symptom relief, so hot flushes, night sweats in particular. But longer term, there are some good studies around bone health, for example, and also neuroprotection, so how we protect the brain, and cardiovascular health. Those phytoestrogens are really useful to get in the diet. Now, we do know that the gut microbiome does play a role in how well we can use those phytoestrogens from foods. So that goes back to another food group that's really important, fiber and fermented foods, because we need to get that gut microbiome healthy and diverse. And so plants, variety of plants, whole grains, we need to be getting in that 30 grams at least of fiber a day. And when you look at the national dietary surveys, only 4% of people are hitting that. And that's crazy. 96% of people are not getting sufficient fiber. And it becomes crucial.
Sorry, Christine, could you give us an example of how a lady or anybody could achieve 30 grams of fiber a day? Give us a rundown of.
Yeah, of course. So again, I think it's helpful if you're eating legumes, beans, pulses, lots of plants, it'll be easier for you to do that. So that's firstly, one of the first things that I would say is think about the diversity of the different foods that you can get. So if we think about practically in a breakfast, you might be going for porridge with some Greek yogurt. You want to get that fermented foods in, and then you're going to add some chia. You might add some flax seed, you might add some mixed seeds, or you could do a chia pudding. Those are going to be good ways to start with getting enough fiber. So start with breakfast. A lot of women will skip breakfast. There you've got an opportunity to get in some protein and also get in some fiber, and that will stabilize your blood glucose as well through the day. Now, if you're rushed for time, things like overnight oats with seeds is an easy option because you prepare it the night before. And then you might be having a morning snack, you might not, but things like apples, particularly with the skin, or pears, they are rich in pectin, a type of soluble fiber, can be really useful, or a handful of nuts, a handful of seeds. And then if you're thinking about your lunch, then a really large mixed salad is an easy win. maybe with some cooked chickpeas or some different lentils, for example. Then you might have some cooked quinoa in that as well. Then you might also sprinkle over some seeds. So that's another easy win. If you're having a snack, you could just have some carrot sticks and hummus. That would be an easy way of getting in another 3 or 4 grams of fiber. And then again, in the dinner, again, we want to be thinking about half of that plate, mixed vegetables, broccoli in particular. I love the cruciferous vegetables, but have a range, and that's going to be a good way of getting in that fiber. And then if you're going for whole grains, whole grain, brown rice, or something similar, buckwheat or a sweet potato with the skin on. And by doing that at each meal, you're going to be getting 8 to 10 grams of fiber each meal. That's going to add up to what we need ideally for the day. So it is possible, but this is why focusing more on the plants, focusing more on the legumes is an easy way of upping the fiber that you can get.
It's really good to just get a roadmap for ladies out there to just have a visual cue, just a thought about what could they have on their plate to achieve that. And with all those fibers, we're going to really improve the diversity of the gut bacteria. Transit time is going to be better. Detoxification is going to be better because the detoxification of hormones is important as well. And that can't happen unless the bowel's working well.
Absolutely.
So important to avoid constipation at all costs, especially at this time for women.
Yeah. And then we talked about, okay, those are foundations and we might then want to be personalizing it. It's worth mentioning that as we transition through menopause, there will be areas that we may need to focus more on. So a classic one for me post-menopause is something called choline. And choline is essential for the brain because it's the building block for our memory neurotransmitter, or memory chemical called acetylcholine. Now, choline is rich in things like egg yolks. It's rich in oily fish. It's also found in soya, actually, which, of course, is another phytoestrogen. And again, we know from the research that most women just don't get enough. And estrogen influences our body's ability to utilize and synthesize choline. So when estrogen goes down, there is a greater demand on our diet to provide that choline. And particularly if you're concerned about cholesterol, liver health, brain health, then think about my choline-rich foods. It's so important that I have a section in the brain chapter in the book because it's crucial for memory. So choline would be one that I would flag up. And then, of course, we have to mention bone health. Osteoporosis and osteopenia affects many women. It affects men as well, but estrogen is very influential in the balance between our bone building cells, the osteoblasts and the osteoclasts. And our bone is a living organ. It's living, it's constantly remodeling, and it needs key nutrients to do that. And the classic ones everyone would know about is calcium, vitamin D, but it's much broader than that. We need K2, we need magnesium, we actually need B vitamins, we need zinc. And because we know that osteoporosis is influenced by inflammation, we also need to be putting in nutrients that can lower inflammation. So when you look at the research, actually omega-3s and curcumin can be really beneficial for bones. There is also a link between your gut health and your bones. And they've now been looking at certain what we call metabolites that our gut microbes produce, butyrate, actually helping with bone health. So again, this is why all of our body systems working in harmony together. And so getting those foundations right are important, but you may need to then add on certain other nutrients or foods depending on your particular health concerns.
It's so important to personalize everything. Is that covered in your book for somebody that wants to go deeper?
Yes, absolutely. And this is really the title of the book, because there is a whole section on bones and joints, for example. There's a whole section on brain health. There's a whole section on weight loss and metabolic health and cardiovascular health, because these are often the areas that often will be flagged up by either the GP or practitioner that the woman really wants to take proactive steps. And this is the point. It's about being proactive here. And again, going back to the perimenopause, the earlier we start doing this, the better for our health.
So the book is The Personalized Nutrition Guide to the Menopause, published by Singing Dragon, also available on Amazon. Very important to read it, and to read it sooner rather than later. If you're on this journey, inform yourself. And if you're concerned about a specific area of your health, like Christine mentioned, osteoporosis, cardiovascular disease, cognitive health, just dig a bit deeper in the book and find out how you can personalize your nutrition to support yourself, because it is very specific to the person, isn't it? We have to personalize our diet.
Yes.
We have a conversation, which we're talking about, but we do need to personalize because we're all individuals.
And I think also to add on to that is the lifestyle, because we've just talked about bone health. Exercise is fundamentally important for health and longevity. We know that. And everyone's going to be unique in terms of their needs or their previous levels of fitness. But there are some, again, foundations that we know are crucially important. Resistance training being one of those. Lifting heavy weights is crucially important for body composition, bone health, lean muscle mass. But you need to personalize that. You need to be working with a trainer to make sure that you're doing it correctly. The form is right. The intensity is right. The weight is right. But exercise, sleep, managing your stress, all of these are absolutely important. And for women going through this transition, in addition to the diet.
We're going to be talking a lot more about menopause and the importance of nutrition and lifestyle after a few messages from our commercial partners.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to Dora Walsh on UK Health Radio on the Nutrition For Me show, talking about menopause and the importance of nutrition and lifestyle. This week, we're talking with Christine Bailey, and she's a nutritionist, a performance nutritionist, a functional medicine nutritionist, a multi-award winner, and author of The Personalized Nutrition Guide to the Menopause, available from the Singing Dragon Publishing and also on Amazon. You've covered so much, Christine, and I've got a few more questions to ask you before we finish off for today. I know you talked about the exercise, but what about sleep and also supplements? What can we do to improve our sleep? And after that, can supplements help not only with our sleep, but with the menopause in general?
Yeah, and I think, you know what, sleep is often an Achilles heel for many women. And of course, it can have so many knock-on effects, overall energy, your eating patterns the next day, how you respond to stress, your cognitive function, your emotional state. So it's crucial that we are focusing on getting in protocols or routines that can really maximize sleep, because estrogen plays a key role in regulating our circadian rhythm, which is that body's internal clock that controls our sleep-wake cycle. Estrogen goes down, now the circadian rhythm is dysregulated. Often women will find that they are either waking up very early or they have interrupted sleep. Or when they wake up, they're still exhausted and they're wired at night. So it's all dysregulated. So there's a few things that we can really focus on. One of the first things I like to do is what we call correct the clock. Now, this is where things like HRT can actually be useful, because progesterone in particular, and a lot of women who are on HRT will know they often take their progesterone in the evening. And one of the reasons we do that is because that supports a metabolite called allopregnanolone, which also can help calm the body. So we're calming ourselves down to help us sleep better. That can be a very useful strategy. And then we want to make sure that through the day, we're sending the body the signals to either be awake or to calm down. So that's why exposure to bright light early in the morning or exercising earlier in the day can be particularly useful to start correcting that circadian clock. And then, of course, we want to be thinking about the sleep hygiene, our bedtime routines, having it cool and very dark and quiet, but also things like not eating late at night, not eating fatty foods at night, avoiding alcohol, which can really dysregulate our sleep, particularly the rapid eye movement, the REM sleep. Caffeine in the afternoon, big dysregulator, can really affect our ability to wind down and sleep. And then to answer your question about supplements, there are certain supplements that can be really supportive for sleep. Magnesium is probably the most well-known, and particularly magnesium glycinate that can calm the nervous system. And so if you are struggling with worrying or anxiety and that is causing you to feel wound up in the evening, magnesium glycinate can be particularly useful. There are other things we can think about, L-theanine, which again calms the mind. Some women find ashwagandha very useful. And if you're not on antidepressants like SSRIs, then 5-HTP, which is a precursor of serotonin, which can then be converted into melatonin, can also be useful. That's just a selection. Inositol, glycine, these can all be useful. And again, it's really about working with a practitioner to find out what is going to work for you. Often it's the whole strategy through the day that can help with regulating your circadian rhythm and that clock that we've talked about.
It's what we're doing from the morning to the evening or even the night before that can affect our sleep.
Absolutely. And I would also put in there, don't go on fad diets. I'm sorry, but don't start starving yourself. Don't eat erratically because actually in state, you know, when your blood sugar is all over the place, that cannot help your sleep pattern at all. It will spark your cortisol. It will cause disrupted sleep. So regular eating, good balancing of blood glucose is really important.
Yeah, because missing those meals will stop you from sleeping. I know for a fact, when I've seen clients, if they're not eating consistently, a lot of them are fasting. Now, fasting is very
difficult. Exactly.
For everyone, and especially women that are menopausal, going through these hormonal changes, it doesn't suit everyone.
No.
And they're wondering why they can't sleep at night. They just don't have enough protein and the blood sugar balance. So they're feeling empty at the end of the day and they can't wind down.
And then think about relaxation strategies as well. I'm also a trained breathwork coach. So I really value things like meditation, yoga, breathwork as a way of really calming the nervous system. We mentioned right at the beginning that estrogen and progesterone influence our response to stress. They can buffer that cortisol. And so when they are low, then we don't have so much of a buffer. We need to be putting in techniques that we can use daily if necessary to relax that nervous system, to calm the mind, to calm the body. And things like breath work, meditation are really useful for that.
Christine, for anyone that would be interested to work with you as their nutritionist, because we know you're the writer of this wonderful book, but we know that you're a nutritionist too and you're a breathwork instructor, how can they reach out to you?
Oh, that's kind. Yeah, just reach out to me on my website, which is christinebailey.co.uk. And there's a contact form there. You can do discovery calls as well, just to see whether or not it's the right match for you.
I've heard very good things. I know for a fact you're good as a nutritionist and can't wait to read the book. Just before we go, are there any supplements that you're keen on for this transition? We talked about the sleep and for the 5-HTP, the magnesium glycinate, the L-theanine, the ashwagandha. But are you a fan of any supplements for women that are going through menopause or perimenopause, etc.?
Yeah, I think it's always a good idea to work with a practitioner so that they can really personalize it. We do know that the nervous system can often be dysregulated. We can often see changes in energy metabolism. And getting those basics, good B complex formula, for example, can be really beneficial. Omega-3 fatty acids, the choline that I mentioned, these are all really useful additions. But do work with a practitioner because, as we've mentioned before, it's really about getting the foundational diet and lifestyle in place first, and then the supplements are the add-on as needed.
Your website is christinebailey.co.uk. Definitely reach out to her. And listeners, I really hope you've enjoyed listening to the show as much as I've enjoyed presenting it. Join us again next week on the Nutrition for Me show on UK Health Radio. Today's show is brought to you in association with Revive Active, our show's sponsor, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, offering solutions across all life stages. Revive Active are committed to pure, premium, and positive solutions for everyone's well-being needs. Working with your body's needs from morning to night, from energy to a restful sleep, kids' health to active aging. We've teamed up to provide UK Health Radio listeners with 15% off their range. So you can try it for yourself. Just go to reviveactive.com and use Radio 15 to see what feeling super is all about.